Organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And you already know, but if you don't know, you finna learn more. For more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. That way you can get an overall experience about the organization, the members, how to become a part of it, the codes of conduct, just everything they bring to the table, including the learning center. So once again, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. It's the home for your happiness. If you want to be happy in life, tell them, Pat. If they want to be happy in life, go to freedomtrainradio.com. If not, you ain't going to be happy in life. I'm telling you. That's just how it goes. Ain't that right, Pat?
Yeah. You want to be happy, like, go to freedomtrainradio.com.
There you go. There you go. That way you get all the information you need about us. And remember, all of our podcasts are on iTunes, Google Play, Radio Republic, Stitcher. We got you. So that way you can go and listen to it. And see, I said it right this week. I said Radio Republic. Did I still say it wrong?
It's Radio Public.
See, you keep adding the re on it. I don't know why you keep adding the re part on it.
Radio Public. You're adding the re.
Hey, them cats outside, aren't you? Hey, that black cat just jumped on top of the other cat, bit the back of the neck. He finna go ham on that. She made it. Never mind. Hey, you should have stopped. He was finna get that cat the business. But we out here, man. We out here. What's going on, man? It's been a week. How you been, man?
I'm doing better. You know, I was sick, and then I pulled my hammy the week before last. So everything's doing better now.
Hey, man, you're getting old out here. So it's all good, man. Them hams get right. You're getting old. You got to stretch.
Yeah. But, hey, you know, I'm going to add sprinting back to my workout because I need to do it. So I ain't no time like getting the hammy pulled to realize that your hammy's getting weaker.
Right. That's all good, man. It's all good. Hey, before we jump into our topic, have you been paying attention to what they've been talking about lately on the Mueller reports?
I mean, I know he turned the report in, but don't nobody know what's in it. He turned it in Friday, so I haven't really been,
okay.
You know,
that's what,
following
that's what they're talking about. Okay. Yeah, because I saw some things today. I really didn't look at them all the way, but I just saw some things today, so. That's why I was trying to ask
you
what was going on with that.
You know, it's been big news since Monday, really. Because, you know, I said this to people who like to follow the news. I myself am one of them. You gotta learn how to tune it out until it's important enough to tune in. They've been talking about this Mueller report for the past 2 months, even though nobody knew what was in it. And he just turned it in Friday. We're not really going to know what's in it, probably for another week or two. So it really ain't no point in getting caught up in all the speculation and all of the shows trying to predict what's in it. Just chill out for a little bit and then check the news feed in a week or two, and you'll be able to see whatever's released, because we don't even know if the Justice Department is going to release the report. You know, they're not obligated to release it to the public.
Right. So we just know the motherfucking report is out here.
Yeah, it's hurt then. So the 670-plus day investigation is now officially over. And, you know, it yielded dozens of criminal indictments and several guilty pleas and, you know, two or three convictions. So he definitely did a good job in the report. It definitely stung a lot of people.
Right. Yeah, well, we're going to keep our eye on that Mueller report so we can see what the hell they talk about in that. So. All right, so as far as our topics today, we got four topics, and one, we're going to talk about the New Zealand massacre and then the aftermath of that as far as the Prime Minister calling for the gun ban. We'll talk about that. We're going to give our thoughts on the Miami hunger strike. There are nine black men in Miami who are on the hunger strike, and their mission is to boycott the killings that are happening in Miami. So we're going to give our thoughts on that. A third topic is my city, my county, Leon County, Tallahassee. For the fourth year in a row, we're number one in the state of Florida as far as chlamydia rates. But we're also number one in just straight up bacteria STD rates across the board. So we got to talk about that because it's our motherfucking city and I do STD prevention. So I'm going to get my thoughts on that. And then we're going to round this thing off by talking about Patrick Uncle, one of his favorite politicians of all time. They call him back from the dead because that's what he looked like. None other than Fear the Burn, Bernie Sanders. So we're going to talk about Bernie and his 2020 campaign. So we already know.
With the Leon County STD thing.
It do, don't it? It do. You bleed right into it. Feel the burn.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about your favorite politician.
Right.
Hey, man, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. So if you all have not been paying attention to the news, we're gonna catch up. So on March 15th, a dude named Brenton Tarrant attacked two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand, killing 50 people using five guns, as they say, five guns inscribed with various names of historical figures and battles that he was using to say they inspired him to do the killings. It's kind of a white supremacist, the way this article is writing it, kind of a white supremacist Christian versus Muslim thing. So this guy felt that it was his duty to attack and kill the Muslims in the two different mosques in New Zealand. And the outcome of that is now the Prime Minister wants to ban all handguns. And they're saying the dude, Tarrant, had a 74-page manifesto online. So about the different things that he wanted to do and putting his own spin on history and things that inspired him to basically go out and commit these atrocities, not just him, but other people to go out and commit these atrocities and shoot up these mosques in New Zealand. And it's yet another international terror attack on a mosque, on Islamic people and Islamic faith. So before we get to the gun ban, Pat, this overall, because we've been seeing these attacks for centuries, as far as one group of people thinking that their ideology is higher than the next group of people. And we can see their slant on religion always takes them to violence. So, Pat, just overall, what are your thoughts on this massacre, this latest massacre? And secondly, what do you think about the ideologies that they consume that leads them to violence?
I mean, I really, you know, it's obviously always a sad thing when a bunch of people get murdered over some bullshit.
Right.
And this is just another example of a bunch of people getting murdered over some bullshit. But in the grand scheme of historical happenings, it's, you know, it's pretty common. It's pretty regular.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm not even going to sit here and pretend like I'm shocked and surprised and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You know, everybody but white people seem to know, recognize, and acknowledge the fact that white people are.
They do this all the time.
Exist, and white people are prone to killing people in large numbers. So In terms of the ideology, I feel the same way about the killings themselves as I do about the ideology. I mean, it is what it is. It's there. It's not going nowhere. And, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I am happy that New Zealand took the quick approach that they took to ban gun assault rifles, assault weapons. And they're taking steps to ban, or I believe they've already banned, high-capacity magazines of all types.
Right.
And they're
right.
trying to push the ban even further. That stuff is all heartening, but to me, it becomes interesting when you start talking about stuff like this on this level, because oftentimes when you see these swift and appropriate responses, they're in groups that are largely... Like, they're in groups that don't have a lot of diversity in terms of the population. Now, I know there are other people in New Zealand besides New Zealanders. I know that they have a heavy Asian presence, and I know this and that. But for the most part, a good chunk of New Zealand is white people.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just view it as different. I view it as them shoring up their own communities and taking care of their own people. I would view it differently if it had happened in a truly multicultural place like America, where you could say, okay, the white people in power are finally taking a stand against the crazy white people on the fringes. But strong stances never seem to come out of countries with high levels of diversity. So in that sense, I'm happy that New Zealand took the steps they took. I think they're extremely appropriate. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, yeah, well, white people take care of white people, so.
But
again, let me caveat that by saying, I understand this was a mosque, and this was a religious-based thing. And I understand that some of the people in the mosque were from Arab. Maybe even most of them were Arabian of some sort, from the Middle East. I'm sorry. But, again, the overall tone of what I'm saying is that the overall cultural makeup of the of New Zealand is overwhelmingly white, whereas
right, yeah.
the cultural makeup of like America is majority white, but it's not overwhelmingly white.
Right, right. But now my butt was for the gun ban, the swift gun ban at that, because we're talking days, hours, you know, the gun ban. But it's the gun, because you said it's an appropriate action, but my just playing devil's advocate, just thinking, is it truly an appropriate action as far as to be able to curb these terroristic acts by these crazy white people? Because will it only force them to find another way to be mass terrorists?
I think as a first step, you know, as an initial response, it's appropriate. If it ends right here, it's not, because we all know banning guns is not enough to stop people from taking lives on a large scale. There have been mass stabbings, as much as we like to joke about it, and there are plenty of other ways to kill a large amount of people quickly.
Right.
But I think as an initial action, guns are the by far one of the easiest ways to kill a large group of people quickly. And so when you limit the ability of people to have guns and of people to have guns that can discharge large quantities of bullets quickly, I think you do put up a bit of a barrier in terms of the next activity following. But I'll say, if this is the only thing that they do, then it's inadequate. It's not enough, because we know we need mental health solutions, we need cultural solutions, we need historical solutions, psychological solutions, like all of those things tie in together. And those things have to be addressed. So I'm by no means am I saying that the gun ban is a long-term solution or an appropriate solution for the long term.
Because it's a nice short-term, hey, look at what we're doing better than America.
Right.
But
that might have something to do with it.
I think so, because it was just how quickly they acted on it first, because over here in America, you know, you have a whole bunch of lobbyists and things that are fighting it. But, and I'm not sure about the whole parliamentary and how they do government in Australia, but it was very, very quick. My first thought was, well, this seems like something that they're saying, hey, world, look, America's supposed to be the great America it is, and they can't even figure out to ban these guns. But, you know, it's like I've always said it. I think white male control is more important than gun control. But that's a whole nother issue that we're going to talk about, because another white male committed another mass terroristic act. And I know within white America, they might talk about it behind closed doors, but in public or in the media, we're still not hearing them talk about the issue of these white men who go off on these crazy shits and just kill a whole bunch of people. And that needs to be addressed, because those are the things that's causing these mass killings. Yes, they're using these weapons, but it's something going on with white men. And the thing about it is, this has always been going on with white men, though. Like, this is still nothing new, like we talked about earlier. This is a centuries long issue, but it's like now, especially in America, with America not being so white as it used to be in the past, let's start looking at this from all angles, from all perspectives. Even you white people who claim to be allies, who claim to be against white supremacy, these are things you need to be talking about. These are things you need to be looking into. When a white man commits acts like this and gets a slap on the wrist, all the white people who claim to be the modern-day abolitionists, well, I want to see some shit. I don't want to see just your silence. I don't just want to see your anger and disgust. We want to see some other things happening that you all can do to help quell this type of behavior.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. And that's why I said I think the gun ban is a short-term solution. I don't believe the gun ban even needs to be permanent. But I think as an immediate response, until we can deal with those other issues, those more intangible issues of psychology, emotions, and all of that other stuff going on, the crazy people don't need to have easy access to high-capacity magazines and rapid-fire machinery. So that's where I stand on it. But you're 100% right in terms of the issue being bigger than just removing the guns, because I know people hate to hear it being said, but it is true. Guns don't kill people. People with guns kill people.
Right. That's the truth.
That's the truth. And I know when the conservatives say it, we know that they got a spin on it, but spin be damned, it's still a fact of life that a gun left to its own devices is not going to fire.
It's an inanimate object.
So I'm with you on that. And we'll see what they do. I do know the NRA is one of the strongest pro-gun organizations. They have one of the strongest lobbies in the world. And they're heavily focused in America. There isn't a big pro-gun conservative movement in New Zealand or in the UK, for that matter, not to the scale of what the NRA can do here in America. So things are a little bit different. You also have to consider the fact that white people in America have a different psychology. They feel like in America, we feel like we're constantly under threat. And white people, more so than anybody else, feel like they're constantly under threat from something. So even when something does happen that directly affects them, I believe that a lot of the times they feel like they have to weigh the pros and cons of preventing this thing from happening again and potentially being left defenseless should one of these groups or one of these people or these organizations rise up and try to destroy them, like so many of them believe is bound to happen.
Let me get my words out. All that comes back to them and their guilty conscience and that guilt and all those things there, because that's what they would do. If they were in our position, they would try their best to kill every one of us, you know, if the roles were reversed. So they're just afraid of us doing what they already do and what they would do. And, you know, to me, that's what it all goes back with white people. They We all know you reap what you sow. And they know the seed that they've sown. So it's like, all right, well, we got to be prepared for the get back that black people might come with. So to me, and that's from, you know, my opinion, from what I've read, everything I've read, all the rhetoric that I've heard white people talking, whether it's Fox News on the radio, all different places. It's just fear, 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 fear. And these acts, like you're saying, these acts come out of that fear of, hey, like this is, hey, we're afraid of Muslims, so let's go kill Muslims, even though most of the terrorist acts that we see ain't from Muslims. We're not saying that Muslims don't have terrorist acts, especially over here, but, you know, we know what we see.
In terms of black people in America, Muslims ain't a threat to us. White Christians.
At all.
So,
at all. Yeah, I mean, but we all know that 9/11 was used as a ploy to push that narrative that Muslims are dangerous. But white people, look at the amount of deaths that we just encountered from white people who are Christians than we have from any type of Muslim. You can put all the Islamic groups together and white people will lack that shit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... White people are, and that's funny because Trump made a statement the other day about having some of the toughest guys on, you know, the toughest people. And we all know that underneath all of that, especially when he started talking about the bikers for Trump, he's talking about racist white people. And the interesting thing about that is those are some of the scariest people you'll ever meet in your life. Like, they're just racked with fear. Their entire ideology is built on being afraid of other groups, being afraid of what some other group is going to do to them. And it's nothing else but an irrational fear, because none of these other groups have ever done anything to them. So, you know, and that comes back to what you said about them being, you know, guilty conscience. They're worried that somebody's going to do what they would do. But, you know, it is what it is. White people are going to keep doing what white people do, which is be crazy. And, you know, as a black person in America, I'm just to the point now where I'm like, you know what? What can I do to minimize that potentially happening to me and my community?
And that's one of the reasons why I want to talk about this, because, you know, get the formalities out of the way, but going to this space, how do we keep ourselves safe from terrorists that we know from us in our community that have access to us, whether it's internally within our community or externally?
I mean, for me personally, I think one of the things black people have to realize, they have to understand, is something that they don't seem to want to, especially the younger generation, and that's what that white people are a threat when in terms of being a culture group. You can have your one or two white friends, or your four or five white friends, or your 30 or 40 white friends, and they all might be decent people. But the culture of white people has proven itself time and time again to be a destructive culture, especially when it comes to dealing with non-white people. And our communities, in my opinion, are far too open and receptive to those dangers. You know, you look at something like a Dylann Roof, who walked in the church and had a conversation with people before he opened up and just started shooting up the church. And if you look at that in isolation, you say, okay, well, that's an isolated incident. But then you look at how many black churches have been bombed, shot up, burned down, torn down, and raised, ravaged, and how many black people have been killed or murdered in the church at the hands of a white supremacist, and all of a sudden it's not an isolated incident, it's a pattern. A pattern that we need to start protecting ourselves from.
Well, that, I just ran across the video of the white dude, the latest incident here in America where the white dude beat up the black lady. You got that, then you have the incident where the black dude stomped out the elderly black lady on the train. All those, think about the thing that happened in Oakland where the white guy stabbed up the black woman. Like, we're not safe.
Well, you're right. What we need to do to protect ourselves internally, though, I think is different from what we need to do to protect ourselves from external forces. When it comes to dealing with white people, we need to implement safeguards, and our community should not be as accessible to them as it is. When it comes to dealing with ourselves, we need a massive cultural overhaul. Period. And because what happened in terms of the black dude stomping out the elderly ladies, that or the elderly lady, that should not have been permitted. Even when you go into, you know, the white dude at the McDonald's that put his hands on the black girl with four brothers standing around, that shouldn't have been permitted. So we got all these examples of things going on in the community that shouldn't be permitted. But I think the number one thing we need to do in terms of keeping us safe from white supremacy is to not let white supremacy move so comfortably around us. We got to get over this whole we are the world, love everybody shit, and start understanding that, like, your kids could potentially pay the consequence of you being soft. Like, if a white person is mad at me for G-checking them for walking through my hood, who are you? What are you doing here? Do you live around here? Then that white person can be mad at me. But you ain't just walking around my neighborhood.
I mean, like, when, you know, we talked about this before. Like, when we look back at integration and how the parents just line their kids up to go fully into dangerous situations. Like, you're sending helpless children into fully dangerous situations. But we don't even, I think we care too much about what other people think.
We do.
And the thing is, well, you know how other groups of people say, well, you black people should understand you've been through this. That don't mean we owe you motherfuckers anything, though.
Because ain't nobody help us when we was going through it. So
right.
Go ahead.
Understanding what's going on and having the responsibility to act on things are two different things. We don't have the responsibility to anybody else to help them in anything. We can choose to just being human, but we don't owe any other group, and I want all black people and everybody who listens to this, I don't care what color you are, black people don't owe you all anything at all. So stop with the things, or, well, the intersectionality, and we should all just act as one, because when it comes time to act as one, all the rest of you people never show up when black people need y'all. Y'all don't show up. So fuck out of here with all that.
But intersectionality is another interesting, because all of these terms that, to the best of my knowledge, were created by black people to describe the many different layers of oppression that we experience. You know, that particular word, I believe, was created by a black female.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting when we come across all of these, because one, they always say, well, you should know being black. But then it's like, okay, why aren't you trying? Because we're still dealing with these things, but you want us to continue to struggle in what we're struggling with alone, and help you struggle.
And help you with you with what you're doing while you ignore us.
Right, like what, like, and for me, that's why I don't feel bad about asking a random white person walking through the neighborhood who they are and what they got going on. If you truly understand the way white people claim they understand, then you would understand why a black person seeing you walking through their neighborhood for the first time would stop you and ask you what you're doing. You wouldn't even be mad about that. Because you understand that you're not a regular presence there. And as far as they know, you could be a Dylan Roof getting ready to shoot up the neighborhood. You could be somebody dropping bombs in people's porches and mailboxes. You could be doing any number of nefarious things. So if you really understand that, that's not an issue. But like you said, and I'm going to echo it too, black people don't owe nobody a goddamn thing, because ain't nobody come to our rescue. If they did, we wouldn't still be having these problems.
Right. Right, but that's the biggest thing. But out of this whole thing with New Zealand, you know, the overall thing is we need to think about is we can clearly see we are not immune from terrorist attacks. Why? Because we face them on a regular basis. So how can we better protect ourselves, our children, our families, our communities? Because we're behind enemy lines and we're in the midst of all these things happening. And you see what white people are doing to themselves. So you know they don't have no problem doing that to us. So, but we want to move on in our topics. In Miami-Dade County, right here in Florida, there are 9 men who are on a hunger strike called Operation Hunger Strike. And let me read some. It said, by now, many in South Florida are probably aware of Operation Hunger Strike, where 9 men vowed to fast for as long as it takes for us to see what gun violence has done and is doing to our community. When I learned about the men who so want to bring about a positive change and stop the killing, especially of our black youth, I wanted to offer my support, so I stopped by their makeshift home at the corner of Northeast in Liberty City and let them know, yada, yada, they praying for them. So the men's name, my minister, Anthony Eugene Durden, who told me that it was because of his late son, Pastor James Rick Hines Jr., that his wife was turned around, that his life was turned around. So his son died of a heart attack. So I don't know what that got to do with guns. But so these men, when I saw this article the other day, I started thinking about a lot of different things and a lot of different ways these things could happen. But they're on a hunger strike to help bring more attention to the violence that's going on in Liberty City and ultimately help stop the violence. I get what they're doing. I get the overall thing, but I wish things like this don't have to happen, because most people don't give a shit about these men doing this hunger strike. And while these men are doing this hunger strike, violence and things are still happening. And I'm not saying these things to kind of down what they're doing or to spit on what they're doing. But what I am saying is we have men who are willing to do this to help save the community, but we have so many more people who don't care. So how do we bridge the damn gap? What's your thoughts on this, Pat?
Honestly, at the risk of sounding coarse, callous, and mean, I think it's foolishness.
Yeah.
I get what they're trying to do, but I think it's a very passive approach, and we're past passive approaches. This is something that Gandhi was able to do with the Hindus and the Muslims over there in India. He was able to cause temporary peace at various different points in India by initiating hunger strikes. But it worked.
Say that again, though. You said temporary.
Yeah, they were temporary. Because he had to do it multiple times. But it worked because people cared so much about him that they didn't want to see him torturing himself.
Yeah.
The Indian people, Hindu and Muslim alike, cared so much about him that they didn't want to see him torturing himself. But even with all that love they have for their Baba, for their father, for Gandhi, they still couldn't maintain peace.
Right.
And so right. I view it as another, you know, it's like Martin Luther King being birthed all over again. You know, he took his nonviolent protest from Gandhi. Now we're taking the hunger strike from Gandhi. And not even taking into consideration the context of what Gandhi was dealing with compared to the context of what we're dealing with. It's two different situations from all angles. And so, not from all angles, because from one angle you could say he was trying to get his people to stop killing each other, and the same can be said of these men, but the respect they have for Gandhi was so much greater than I'm sure the respect this had for these nine men. But I don't... Go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, but that's one of the things that is the respect factor, because really, like, if we was really on the real respect factor, these men wouldn't even have to go on the hunger strike. Because we wouldn't be killing ourselves.
Well, yeah. But that's true.
Well, you know, I don't think the hunger strike is the best tactic. We do all kind of know the origins of the hunger strikes, but I don't think it's the best tactic. But I also see why they're doing it, but I also see the disconnect between them and the community that they're trying to affect as well.
I don't see any particular purpose for this. This, to me, I'm not accusing these men of anything, but to me this seems like a publicity stunt. And I say that because it's a very passive approach to dealing with a problem. And the reason I say it's a passive approach is because it's an approach that doesn't require you to go out and engage with anything else, with anybody else. It doesn't require you to change the world in any sort of way. you're basically demanding that the world acquiesce to your demands, or you won't do something to yourself. Like, that's a very, and so I can't even call it brave in that sense, because it's not a very brave approach either.
I do think it's passive. I agree that it's a passive approach. I don't know if I would call it brave either. I'm hoping.
And I can appreciate them wanting to do something.
Right, right.
But this is not, in my opinion,
it's not the best tactic.
It's not. It's just a poor tactic. Poor in every way, shape, form, and fashion.
Because it's like I was telling somebody the other day when I was first read this article. It's like here in town. Like, we've had, like, the violence in Tallahassee is real. It's real out here in these Tallahassee streets. Whether it was under the last mayor or this mayor, you know, we had our share of violence. But I often see different activities that are organized here to help stop the violence, but none of those activities have stopped the violence. And I think that when we talk about stopping the violence, we take, like you said, safe, passive approaches that don't really get to the root of the problem. Like, what's the root of the problem of these violence that we know one of the root causes is poverty. Another one is racism, all these things here. But we also understand the things that we do to ourselves. So how do we curb these things? How do we really attack these things? Going on a hunger strike, it's a good gesture. But will by the end of the year, will we see a significant decline in the number of violence in Liberty City because of the hunger strike? Those are questions that have to be asked. Because, yes, it's one thing that they're doing it, but the overall thing is, did you really think about this overall? Like, did you really, really put real thought into this as far as short-term and long-term and what the overall outcome would be? Because if not, then we're still going to be here this time next year talking about the same thing.
Right. You got to address, for stuff like stopping the violence, you've got to address root causes, or you've got to address high-level symptoms. And this doesn't do either. And you create space to address root causes by dealing with high-level symptoms that'll calm down a lot of the action that's going on. But again, this doesn't do either. You know, if you want to deal with a high-level symptom, you can give the kids something to do with their times. Give them some sort of community outlet, something like that. You can do something to that point that gives them another way to express their frustration and anger while you work on their emotional development and their people and reasoning skills, their logic skills, and their emotional IQ.
Yeah, you can do stuff like that,
but this doesn't do anything. I mean, these nine men could be sitting in a room fasting for who knows how long before anybody even cares to say that they're in there fasting.
Right. I mean, but it's like, I don't know, man. Because we have to make sure that the things that we're doing are really helping. Because yes, in some sense, some of the things that people do, it does have an effect, but does it have the real overall? Does it really help them get to the overall end goal, the overall, you know, the reason why we're doing this is to be able to stop the violence. Because, and I'm saying this from somebody who's been out in the community, in my community, over 10 years doing various things, and I'm always coming back asking myself these questions. All right, Joseph, we did this event. What's the overall outcome of this event, and what are the long-term things? Because we've done events to try to help stop violence. We've done events to help solve poverty and all these things here. And in doing these things and going out and making my mistakes, I realize it's a lot bigger than how we're thinking about it. And yes, we could do small things, but these small things are nothing but still Band-Aids on a bullet wound. And we have to start thinking bigger and more effective ways to help our community. Now, if this hunger strike can be supported by other things, it'll be a beautiful start, but it has to be supported by the community. So that's one thing I will say this. If you're in a dead kind of area and you listen to this, support them damn men.
Yeah, I'll say that if this is utilized as a way to drum up public support in order to create something else, in that vein, and that's something I was thinking about, in that vein, I say, okay, go with it, because all we have to go on is what we have to go on, and it's not very much.
Right.
But in the grand scheme of things, this can't be it. And I would be resistant to it even getting out beyond the Dade County area, because I'd be worried about people labeling it as a publicity stunt and it losing some of its appeal or some of its potency because of that. So I don't know entirely what these guys have planned, but from what it looks like on the surface, from what I've been reading, it doesn't look like there was a lot of long-term thinking done with this in mind. That's just not what it looks like. And if you are in that area and you know better, hit us up and tell us better. But from what we're looking at, from what I'm looking at, that looks like an ill-thought-out, poorly planned, poorly timed publicity stunt.
I'll be nicer, even though I don't disagree with what you're saying, but I'll be nicer and to say that at least it's something that somebody's doing, but it's still very, very, very passive. So in doing that, moving forward, we should be thinking, will this really help solve the problem? Because and we have to look like we have to get past the point of just bringing attention as well. When we're living in it, we have to do more than just bring attention, because we have to go about making real changes within our community. And we have to be able to look at it from the standpoint of nobody's willing to help us. So we got to make these changes by ourselves. So how can we make these changes? So that's it on that one. All right, so let's talk about some STDs and raw sex real quick. Like, apparently, I live in Raw Dog City.
Already.
Did you know you was from Raw Dog City, Pat?
I did not.
But now you know you are from Tallahassee, Raw Dog, Florida. Right?
Oh, dizzy, sizzy.
Because apparently, like I said in the opening, Tallahassee, Leon County is number one in the state of Florida out of 67 counties for the fourth year in a row in chlamydia cases. And another article came out a day or two after that one saying that we are now number one in STDs across the board. So let me read you this short article. I read it. U.S. health officials are asking the Trump administration to declare sexually transmitted diseases a public health crisis in America. That's because a new report from the CDC shows rates of syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia have gone up. Nearly 2.3 million cases were reported in the U.S. This tops the previous record in 2016 by over 200,000 cases. Locally, Leon and Gaston counties, mostly Leon, both have very high rates of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and infectious syphilis. In 2015, the rate of these three STDs was 1,042 per 100,000 residents in Gaston County. And in Leon County, it was 1,357 per 100,000 residents. Florida's overall average in 2015 is 587 cases per 100,000 residents. With students just returning to class at Florida State, Florida A&M, and Tallahassee Community College, that's a concern. Well, and we all know that some of these diseases are being brought back here, too. We do know that. The health department says in Leon County, people from ages 15 to 24 are considered high risk. We've been telling them that for a long time, too. Currently, the Leon County Health Department is seeing an increase in chlamydia and other sexually transmitted diseases. According to the 2018 County Health Rankings, Leon County leads all of Florida's 67 counties of newly diagnosed cases. The department is taking initiatives. Yeah, right. But the department is taking initiatives to try to decrease the amount of people affected by educating people on how to fight against STDs. So, yeah, Pat. Raw Dog City, dog. Now, what angers me about this is on both sides. It's not just the side of the people who are being infected. It's the people who's supposed to be working to stop the infections, to help educate the people. And my frustration is at both sides, because this bullshit that's happening on both sides. And why do I know? Because damn it, I work in it. We could do a better job as the ones who are about the prevention, the testers and the counselors could do a better job of doing our job. Actually doing the job, like do the job. That will help it on the other end too, as far as the people who are contracting the diseases. Being smarter, parents also teaching your kids something different. All right, but before I go off on that, let me rein myself in. Pat, when you hear this about Tallahassee, what goes through your mind?
I'm glad I left.
That's it.
Yeah, that's about it. I mean, I would have been good anyway, because it wasn't like I was, you know, I wasn't like hoeing around or nothing like that. But it is sad to hear that your home city is so out there. You know, like the kids don't give a fuck, the young adults don't give a fuck, the middle aged and old adults don't seem to give a fuck. And that's always going to be a little bit hard to take in. But at the end of the day, I mean, you know, I don't know what you can do. I mean, I have my ideas, but this is largely your area where, you know, you tee off. And so, you know, I'm going to just let you tee off.
Well, I mean, the thing, like I said, you know, starting on the side of the counselors and testers. I ain't gonna call no names or call out no agencies, but there's a lot of people who in this counseling and testing thing who full of shit. There is enough counselors and testers to be able to make a bigger impact than what we're doing, to spread more information. Because I realized in the conversation that I was having last week that, man, we do a lot. I know in my agency, we do a lot. Like, we out here in these streets. Like, we in these streets finding these diseases, finding people who have HIV, finding people who have syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, encouraging people to get into these clinics. Like, we probably come across 3,000, 4,000 people a year as far as education, training, counseling, testing, and all those different things. I have to give us a pat on the back, because we do a damn good job of making sure that we go out. But we're only one agency, and there's other agencies in the city and in these areas, especially Leon and Gaston. I know my homeboy in Gaston, he can't do it by himself. So it's a small number of people. And there are a couple of people at some of these other agencies who are out here in these streets, but it's a small number of people who are trying to tackle a huge problem. So we got 300,000 people that we're trying to affect. And I could count on one or both hands how many people I can trust to be out here in these streets and really making a sound impact as a counselor, tester, in those capacities as being able to prevent the disease. But we can't go home and make people do what the hell they're supposed to do, though. So when it comes to having sex, unprotected sex, ideas around sex, sexuality, parents not wanting to talk to their kids about sex, if you are 18 and you don't know how babies are made, something wrong with you and your damn parents. Yeah. If you were having sex and you believe that you can't get an STD, something wrong with you and your parents. But that's what we're dealing with. It said 13 to 24. 13 to 24 nationally is the age range of the group of people who have the highest rates of STDs across the board. The numbers are growing between 13 and 24. 13 and 24, which means is you got damn parents got to start talking to y'all damn kids about sex, whether you want to talk to them about sex or not.
Right.
This is not about how you feel. It's about you decided to bring kids into this damn world, and it's your job to teach them how to protect themselves.
Right.
That's what that is on one end, but it's also for these damn people 13, 14, 15, up to 24. If you're going to be having sex, you need to understand what's going on. Now, I understand 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, maybe even 18, sometimes 19. you know, they very, very, very special. 20 to 24, I expect more out of you. But there's still so many people out here in this world who are ill-prepared to be adults or doing adult things, and these adults keep acting like these children, these teens, won't have sex. When you know they're going to have sex, because half y'all adults, most of y'all adults, started having sex in your teenage years. Nothing has changed about the world. People have sex in their teenage years. But in this city alone, this is a Bible Belt, backwards country town, and we can do so much more. The institutions of higher education is where we find most of the STDs. I'm going to say that again. The institutions of higher education is where we find most of the STDs.
And that's important. That's significant. And I'm glad you repeated that. Because the common misconception is that college kids are smart, they're intelligent, and really people that ain't going to college just fucking around and doing all of the dumb shit.
No.
In actuality, it's the motherfuckers at college supposedly getting their education is doing a lot of the dumb shit.
The people who are supposed to be the educated ones are making the worst sexual decisions. Because guess what education they are missing?
Right.
Sexual education, because their parents didn't think it was important. Like I tell people all the time, so you mean to tell me you'll actually teach your child how to drive because you think it's an important lesson to learn. Teach your child how to drive so they keep themselves safe if they want to drive. So people find that makes sense to people, but they don't think it makes sense to teach your child about sex and how to have safe sex because you know they're going to have sex. But that'd be the thing, though. But that's where a lot of this come from, no education or miseducation.
Yeah. Did you know, I told you I was watching that comedy show on sex education, and the interesting thing he said that I didn't even think about until he said it, and did you realize we talk about it all the time, I just didn't think about it the way he said it until he said it. And, you know, it's like one of the most terrifying things you can ask a lot of parents to do nowadays is talk to their kids about sex.
Right.
Why is that? Like, that should not be. Sex is one of the most important decisions your child will make in their life. Who they have sex with is vastly more important than damn near every other decision they will make in their entire lives.
Right. You can ruin your life.
You don't want to talk to them about.
You can ruin your life having sex with the wrong person. Look, in my office alone, last year, 2018, we found 16 cases of HIV, right? Out of 12 months. What month is it now? Huh? March, right?
Right.
Bro, we done found 8 or 9 cases already this year.
Yeah.
Already this year is March, and we found 8 or 9 cases already this year. That's not including the STD. We just came off of a syphilis breakout a month and a half ago in this city. If you live in Tallahassee and you listen to this, look, these STDs ain't playing with your ass.
Nope.
You ain't special.
Nope.
Nobody in your family is special. None of your friends are special. None of that. These STDs will kill you. The people who work at some of these agencies don't care about you because you getting sick is money in their pockets. Our job is to find you people with diseases so we can report it and somebody can get paid. And somebody can look good because we can say we found people with diseases. This thing to me isn't that hard to do. Sexual behaviors need to change. But you all need to understand every time you get a disease, you insure us in job security. We're supposed to be working ourselves out of a job. Just marinate on that. So.
Yeah, I mean, we've had these shows on sexual topics before. And it doesn't seem to be getting much better out here. Like, people still seem to be just as scared as ever to talk to their kids about sex. And then or they decide they want to talk to them about sex, or I blame them or chastise them when they catch an STD, or their daughter gets pregnant, or their son gets somebody pregnant, or whatever the case might be. And it's like, that's a bad time to decide you want to be a parent.
But it's like the likelihood, like I told you, we got a running joke. We tell college students, hey, you're not a real college student in this town till you caught chlamydia. And we say that when we in our class, just, you know, light joke or whatever, get things started so we can really go in and teach them some things. But think about that. Like the likelihood of somebody in this city getting just committed, but chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, the likelihood is highly likely that if you come to these counties and have sex, especially unprotected sex, oral or vaginal or anal, because we don't know how many people walk around with oral syphilis, chlamydia, and gonorrhea. I got to go look at them numbers, because we know everybody eating coochie and sucking dick and licking booty and stuff like that these days, right?
Yeah.
So it's just thinking about the different places and the different numbers. Like, it's highly likely because a lot of college students have been socialized, especially men, have been socialized to have sex with any and everything that come your way. So a lot of these students, and same way I was, so I'm not saying nothing that I wasn't doing, I'm doing the same thing, were highly sexually active. When I was a college student, if you was a girl and you looked at me right, you was getting. But it's like, I'm glad I always use condoms, though. But it's like, and I'm sure, I know it wasn't no different back when I was a student in college. But it's just now, being on this side, it's just like, look, man, you all don't have to do the dumb stuff we did. You all don't like, I hate the ideology that you have to go through hell to learn not to go through hell. No, if I'm over here telling you not to go through hell, then damn it, don't go through it. You don't have to get shot in the face to realize that, hell, getting shot in the face is something bad. Somebody should just be able to tell you about the experience or tell you that that's bad. I don't have to go through that. But that's another ideology that we have, is I have to walk through hell to come out on the other side to be successful. No, you don't. Like my dad told me, a smart man learns from his own mistakes. A wise man learns from other people's mistakes. Hell, be wise. So that's all I want to say about that. You know, we talk about the STD, but just want to look, man, just because it's hometown, man, we got to do something different. And because of what I do for a living. Parents, we need y'all help. We can't do this alone. We need y'all help. We need you all to start talking to you all's kids about sex. Stop sending your children to high school, to elementary school, middle school, and high school without talking about sex, because they having sex in elementary, middle, and high school and college, whether you like it or not. So that's all I got to say about that. All right, so our last topic, as we told y'all, we're talking about Patrick's uncle, Bernie Sanders, Feel the Burn, Bernie. And he announced that he's once again running for president in 2020. You going to vote for him, Pat?
Nope.
Why you ain't going to vote for Uncle Bernie?
I'm not sold on Bernie Sanders. He talked a good, well, last election, he talked a good game. Although there were some holes in his game, like when he tried to call it a travesty and all this other stuff, that independents couldn't vote in primary elections. That's how the system's been for the longest. And for him not to know that, being that he's been an elected official for over 30 years, I found very troubling.
He ain't have a problem benefiting from that travesty.
Yeah, well, he was using it to make smoke. So, you know, I'm sure he felt like if the independents could have voted, he would have won, because he probably had more independent voters than Hillary Clinton did.
But if it's such a travesty, why he showed up? Should have boycotted.
You know, the way he did his whole election campaign last year of, bro, you've been a member of the Democratic Party for 30 years. You know how this shit works. Why are you pretending like you don't? And why are you allowing your followers to pretend like they're being shafted? If anybody knows you're not being shafted, it's you, because you've been doing this shit for 30 years.
Well, so, well, most of his, a lot of his followers were young, so they, the young people, so they didn't know.
So, but even this year, I haven't heard him say anything that I was, like, especially moving. And in a lot of cases, and this is where I'm always hesitant, because a lot of people seem to think that they're good at feeling someone's energy, and they're good at determining, you know, if I get in a room with you, I can tell if you're real or not. No, no, most of you are not as good at that as you think you are. You're really not.
Right, right.
This is how Donald Trump got to be president, because a lot of people legit felt like he was a legit candidate after going to his rallies and blah, 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 blah. You understand politicians on the campaign trail. That's like a lot of people sitting in the church with a bad pastor and swear to God he good because they could feel it. No.
Nah, he's just good. He's a good motivational speaker.
Right. What you're feeling is not good vibes from the person in terms of their intention. What you're feeling is what they've designed and set up that entire environment to convey to you.
It was structured.
Which is a feeling of excitement and general euphoria.
It was because every speech, every sermon, every announcement, every engagement is structured.
Right. These people spend a lot of time understanding how to make you feel like they're good people. And so that's why I'm like, yeah, you can't trust your feelings and your intuitions when you're engaged in somebody that's been trained to manipulate your feelings and your intuition. And Bernie Sanders does that on a natural, like on a very basic natural level. Like it comes naturally for him. But when you look at his actions,
yeah, there aren't any.
There isn't a whole lot for black people to be excited about with regards to what Bernie has actually done. I always bring up the 94 crime bill because he actually voted for it. I always bring up the fact that he's a senator in a state with the second whitest state in America. Yep. So he doesn't even have an extremely diverse constituency that can pressure him on diversity issues. He toes the line in his rhetoric, and it's easy for white people when they're surrounded by other white people to pretend like they're good people. That's easy. They ain't never got to actually do anything.
Right.
So I'm not sold on Bernie Sanders because he ain't gave me a reason to be sold on him. Every single time, every single chance he's had to act in good faith to the black community, I haven't seen
him showed up.
Where he's right. I mean, even in terms of now they're asking him basic questions like reparations, and he can't even perform when it comes to that because he knows that's going to have to lead to some sort of action.
Man, look, on that Breakfast Club interview, Bernie really tore his drawers, like the country people say. He really tore his drawers. I wasn't voting for him anyway, but he really tore his drawers because, like, that one reparations question where that Solomon asked him, and he was like, yeah, I'm for reparations. I'm definitely for reparations. But then he started talking about trickle-down economics, though, and not actual reparations and the paying out these things of black people. And some of the things he was like, he don't agree with, that shouldn't happen. But it's just like overall, like you said, Bernie is not in touch with black people. Bernie, as a politician, you can't point to things that Bernie has done as a politician to help black America. We can point to things that he's done that has hurt black America, but not many things that we can point to say has really helped black America. Because one question was asked, well, what has Bernie Sanders done to help black people in the struggle against white supremacy and these things? And Bernie, like always, went back to when he was a 20-year-old. Because one thing he was talking about, he said he marched with Dr. King. He was a 20-year-old with nothing to lose. And then he said he worked with Jesse Jackson in his campaign to run for president. Now, Bernie Sanders, come on, man. You ain't done shit. Let's just call it like it is. You ain't done shit. When you have the resources, you have the time, you have these things, you haven't done shit for black people at all. Because if the first thing you point to is something you did when you was, how old is Bernie Sanders?
I mean, man, I think he's like 70, 71, something like that.
So we're talking about over 50 years ago.
Yeah.
You still hanging your hat up on something you did 50 years ago, or even like in the 80s with Jesse Jackson. But when you, like the 94 crime bill, Bernie Sanders, and he talked about it on the Breakfast Club interview. He's been vocal about it. He's been saying it.
Yeah, he's saying
it. You know, Bernie Sanders had to choose who he was going to sell out. And he chose to sell out black people. And Charlamagne asked him, well, do you think that this, you trying to run for president, you trying to do the reparation, the half-ass reparation thing, is this you trying to make up for the stuff you did? He was like, yeah, you know, I kind of want to make up for some of the stuff. Like, fuck you, Bernie. No. That's not how this works. You don't help destabilize black families and think that, oh, man, well, I'm sorry. Just like with the Hillary Clinton shit. It was like, well, she just apologized. I don't give a fuck about her apologizing. You destabilize generations of blacks because you can keep your apology. But it's like now but these people do these things and they want our votes, but then we foolishly fall in line with them. Like, yeah, I'm going to support this person. But I don't think Bernie Sanders deserves our support. I just don't.
Well, the crazy thing, though, is Hillary Clinton got in trouble for calling black kids super predators back in the 90s. Bernie Sanders actually voted for the crime bill that destabilized the community. So,
let's just say he voted for it and Joe Biden wrote it.
Right.
People need to know that.
And Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden's getting ready. He's launched his campaign with the support of a massive amount of black people. But I honestly,
for president?
I've said this before, I think in terms of political activity, Hillary Clinton is probably the most pro-black white politician we've ever seen. And I say that with full knowledge of how y'all feel about her and what the Clinton Foundation has allegedly done in Haiti and all of that. I'm fully understanding of all of that. But in terms of political activity and real actions for black people in America, Hillary Clinton is probably the most pro-black white candidate we've ever seen, and black people can't stand her fucking guts. To me, that says a lot about where we are politically and where we are.
Black women like Hillary. So.
What'd you say?
I said black women like Hillary.
Yeah, well, to an extent, they like her better than everybody else, but
yeah.
My whole thing is, again, Hillary Clinton is probably the most pro-black white candidate that we've seen on the national stage in terms of political activity, even in terms of what she did when she was in the White House. Her staff has always had a few black people on it. She's always had an agenda for black people. She's always had these things in her belt, even going back so far as to integrate her church when she was a teenage girl. It's just interesting how we fall in line for Bernie Sanders because he talks a good game but doesn't really pull up on anything. But we hate Hillary Clinton. We hate her guts because she talk a whole bunch of shit, even though she is delivered on some things. And I'm not a Hillary Clinton fan by any stretch of the imagination. I just think the comparison of her political career and Bernie Sanders' political career, solely based on what they've done for black people, is extremely interesting. You have her with the rhetoric, but the action, and him with
just the rhetoric.
With just rhetoric.
Yeah, Bernie be talking, man. He does a lot, and not just him though. With all candidates, black people, like we're so far behind enemy lines, it's not even funny. But we have to stop falling in love with what people say. Right? It's like everybody's looking for that motivational talk or something like that, because we're a motivational speaking country now. So anybody with something to say, whether they have anything to back it up or not, we just fall, we love to hear what people have to say. And it's like, once again, with this 2020 election, don't be voting for people if you don't think or expect them to do anything to help improve your community. Why would you waste your vote on somebody who you really don't feel can help you? That's not how voting happens. That's not why you should vote. And once again, hey, the people who get voted, who you vote for, those are the ones who get elected. So like last time, the dynamic with Trump and Hillary. So if you said you wasn't voting for Hillary, everybody was like, well, you ain't vote for Hillary, then your vote gonna automatically go for Trump. No, that's not how it works. That's not how voting works. My vote goes to where I vote. So if I vote for John Jacob Jingleheimer Smith, that's what my vote goes for. It doesn't help Trump or Hillary. They both lose a vote.
Right.
And people have to understand and stop taking your civic education from the next person who don't know civics at all. Hell, how many people know that the political education is even called civics? That you, when you get those ballots that are mailed out to you, you know those ballots that come in and or the sample ballots, and they give you all the information about who's running. Read those things. That's how, like, and I keep saying this, the last presidential election, six people were running, and I would go around taking the sample ballot and showing people that six people were running, and they was like, wow, I didn't even know. I thought it was only Trump and Hillary. And I'm like, y'all can't be serious, man. But y'all out here voting, though. Y'all out here slanging out your votes, but you have no idea how this shit works. Like, we got to be careful about who we're voting for. Bernie, if you're going to give Bernie your vote, Bernie need to earn your damn vote. Bernie can't just get your vote just by showing up. You got to earn it.
Right.
So let me ask you this. If it was between Kamala, Bernie, and Cory, who would you run with?
I got to say Cory.
Me too.
Yeah, he's the only one that ain't really done nothing or said nothing. But he's a big question mark, like we said last week. We really don't know what we're going to get with Cory.
Like, we don't.
I suspect that we ain't going to get a whole lot of focus and attention. But, you know, he very well could prove us wrong. Very well.
Yeah, and the next time we have a social discussion, you know, we got to talk about some of these other candidates like Beto O'Rourke, because I had a lot of black people saying, I like Beto. And I was like, well, why? Yeah, and they don't ever really get straight answers.
But I'm not a big fan of Beto O'Rourke myself. So right.
I just want to make sure we are at least covering the candidates for this upcoming 2020. So
right.
People who listen to this can at least have some type of insight going into the election and not just going into it blind. At least your favorite podcast is giving you information about people that you should be voting for. And once again, we're not telling you who to vote for. If you listen to this and you're going to vote for who we voting for, something wrong with you. Vote for who you feel is best for you and your community. Don't vote for who we would vote for. Because if you do that, then you're not even listening. You're not even really listening to us. Because we always tell you to vote for who you want to vote for, but we try to put the information on the table so you can make a sound vote. And we do infuse some of our opinion, but that's why we come back and say, do your own research as well and vote for who you want to vote for, not who we want to vote for. So, yeah, man, but, you know, Uncle Bernie, man, feel the burn. Feel the burn. He need to get a new slogan, too.
He does. I've been saying that since last year. That slogan, since the last election, that slogan is awful.
Yeah, feel the burn. Nah, I'm straight. Not in this city. We don't want to. So, man, look at here. Hey, y'all, remember my new book on the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 3, South America, is out now on Amazon Kindle, as well as my website. My new website, thanks to PIT Web Design, I got a brand new fly website. www.ownersoldiers1.com, www.ownersoldiers.org, my website, all fly and stuff. So one time for PIT Web Design, make sure you go to PITWebDesign.com for all your web design solutions and needs that you need. So check that out. Like I say, my new book, On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 3, South America, available Amazon.com for the Kindle, www.ownersoldiers1.com for your paperback. My new website is up. Hell, I'm excited about life, man. That's how we're doing. We keep dropping these live podcasts on y'all. So we appreciate everybody who supports us across the board. Make sure you go to support The Fix and Lessons from the Screen on Patreon, patreon.com/LFTS, and patreon.com/The Fix. That way you can support those shows. What else, Pat? What else we got? What else announcement we need to make?
I think that's it.
That's it. Hey, y'all. Pat's birthday was last Sunday, but we still celebrating. So one time, hey, one time for Pat too, man. Pat don't like to brag on himself, but Pat be putting together these live websites, and Pat got all type of skill sets and stuff. He don't like to talk about it, but that's why I'm around to talk about it. Hey, man. So one time for Pat, because he be putting it down. He be hooking people up. He's very resourceful and skillful, and he don't talk about it, but I'm gonna talk about it. So one time for my goddamn dog, Pat. Pat yourself on the back, Pat.
Well, I appreciate that, man. Actually made me smile a little bit.
There it is. Hey, man, so we love you all. You know, we do this for the people. We create our platform not just for us to talk, but to be able to share information and resources and people with our community. So we're going to be coming back next Wednesday with a nice interview within the medical field. So we've got a nice surprise for y'all with that. So y'all make sure y'all stay tuned and tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. That's how we get down. What's your parting shot, Pat?
Power to the people.
Hey, you know me, wash your hands so you won't get no pink eye. And with that being said, hey, you got to tell people that, man. Hey, with that being said, two fingers in the air. Like you just don't tell.
I love you.